नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एवं कुक्कुटमिदं
हत्वा
श्रूयमानाद्
विजातिभिः
विवेश गोष्ठं सबालो गोपीनां
नयनोत्सवा.
Who is a festival? Having thus killed the bull demon Arista, he who was a festival for the gopis' eyes entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Purport. This verse exemplifies the sublime contrast of spiritual qualities within Sri Krishna. In one four-line verse, we simultaneously learn that Lord Krishna killed a powerful wicked demon and that his boyish beauty gave festive pleasure to his young girlfriends. Lord Krishna is as hard as a thunderbolt or as soft as a rose, depending on our attitude toward him. The demon Arista wanted to kill Krishna and all his friends. So the Lord beat him into a wet rag and killed him. The gopis, however, loved Krishna, and thus the Lord boyishly reciprocated their conjugal feelings.
Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36, Text Number 15. Every morning we have these classes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where we begin with the first verse of the first canto, and every day go to the next verse. There's 18,000 verses. And we have gone through it several times, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, over the years. And the verse we read today just happens to be today's verse. Selected by destiny. Within Param Satyam, or the highest truth, all apparent contradictions are resolved. So we're reading about some apparent contradictions. The scene is Krishna is calling his most intimate, loving devotees to enjoy the highest, most intimate pastimes of love with him. Love that is free of selfishness, free of ego, love that is unconditional. The love of the soul, the eternal soul, for the supreme soul. And the love of the supreme soul for the soul. Krishna's Rasa Lila is described in Srimad Bhagavatam and many other great scriptures. Sometimes he performs his Rasa Lila on the banks of the Yamuna, near Bamsibat in Vrindavan. Sometimes at the Rasastali Chandra Sarovar area of Govardhan.
So here Krishna is calling gopis to perform this beautiful pastime of love. And in a similar way, the Lord is calling all of us, every living being, into these pastimes of loving reciprocation. Krishna tells in Gita that he is not partial to anyone, that the Absolute Truth is equal to all, but reciprocates according to how we approach. In today's purport, it describes Lord Krishna is as hard as a thunderbolt or as soft as a rose flower, depending on our attitude toward him. So Krishna, or God, is only as hard as a thunderbolt when we are hard like a thunderbolt toward him. Toward him means toward his children as well. Every living being is a child of God. Dharma is to respect, to honor, to serve, to have compassion toward all beings. But when, due to our ego, our own selfish desires, we are abusive, harmful to others, like a thunderbolt, then the Lord reciprocates like a thunderbolt. But when we are living with respect, with compassion, with love, with seva, with service, like a flower, then Krishna is like a flower to us. Very soft, very fragrant, very pleasing. So that's what this festival of Pushyabhishek is about. We're offering flowers to Krishna, not thunderbolts. And Krishna reciprocates. Could everyone hear? Is that Hari Bol or no? What is it? Okay, thank you. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. When we offer even a fruit, a flower, a leaf, or water with love, then God accepts it with love. So the idea of all of you together, we'll describe this tonight. Today I'm supposed to speak on this verse. Is individually and collectively we are taking these flower petals to make it an offering of our desire to love, to serve. The character of a flower, when we develop that character ourselves, then Krishna reciprocates accordingly. So the gopis, they are the ultimate flowers, in the sense that they have the highest, deepest love. And Krishna's calling upon them. And in a similar way, we all have that potential within us. And Krishna's calling all of us. But while he's calling us, there are obstacles that try to stand between us. They are called anartas, unwanted things that are primarily within ourselves.
There are many unwanted situations apparently outside of ourselves. But those unwanted situations that are external actually become wanted and favorable if we adjust within ourselves our consciousness. So the only real obstacle is our egos, our false egos, our selfish tendencies, which give rise to anger, envy, greed, selfish passion, illusion. These are anartas. They're standing between us and the call of God and to his loving service. So as Krishna is calling gopis, Aristasura enters the scene. Now, according to this beautiful scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, who is Aristasura? He's a person who has such intense desire to control, such intense desire to exploit, such intense egoism, that in order to achieve what he wants, he has worked so hard for so long. And as was done in times of the past, especially previous ages, he had attained incredible supernatural powers. Now, supernatural power is like anything, like popularity, like wealth, like skills, like intelligence. Could he either be used in seva, in selfish service, or could be used to exploit with ahankar or ego? Everything has that potential to be either used in maya or illusion, or in yoga maya or truth. Whatever abilities we have, even in making flower petals, can be utilized either to exploit or to serve with love, or anything in between. So this personality, Arista, by his powers, he could transform his body into a bull. He's not just a regular old bull or young bull. He's a mystic with very, very cruel intentions that just to deceive the world appeared in this form. And why is it so deceiving? Because according to the Vedic literatures, the bull is the symbol of Dharma. This is throughout the Puranas, Mahabharata, Vedas, Upanishads. The bull is considered symbolic of Dharma. It has four legs, which are the qualities of Dharma. Dharma means religion. Dharma means true spirituality. Dharma means one's highest occupation. And Dharma stands on these four legs: cleanliness of the body and mind, truthfulness, speaking the truth, living by the truth, austerity, which means being willing to give up selfish things for a higher principle, and being willing to accept things, even if they are very difficult, for a higher purpose. And mercy, compassion, respect toward all living beings. These are the basic principles of Dharma. Without mercy toward others,
without the character of being willing to put aside our own selfish, egoistic ways for a higher purpose, without cleanliness of body, mind, and words, and truthfulness, then so-called dharma doesn't have any substance. It has no legs to stand on. According to our acharyas and the scriptures, the pastimes of the Lord, there is Nitya Leela and there is Naimittika Leela. One is his eternal pastimes, the pastimes of reciprocation of ecstatic love between Krishna and the devotees, between God and the devotees. In the Bible, it is said the first and great commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And Krishna reciprocates with that love. Ye yata mam prapadyante. If we take one step toward Krishna, Krishna takes millions of steps toward us. So that is dharma, to serve with love. Arista, he appeared as a bull, which means he's appearing as a very religious dharmic person. According to the scriptures and according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Aristasura represents one of the great obstacles to pure love of God. Egoism or pride that arises from indulging in misconceived religion, disconnected from its essence, which is pure love or praying. He was a violent person, an egoistic person, an exploitative person who came in the guise of religion or dharma. And that propensity is in all of us. And Krishna is performing this lila in order to show us how to deal with that, to identify with that. As I was explaining, the loving relationships between the Lord and the devotees are eternal. But there's also occasional pastimes of the Lord, Naimittika, which is things like in Vrindavan, when we read about Krishna's pastimes, about these demons that come. Why would demons come to Vrindavan? Why would Krishna allow them to come within this world? It's to teach us lessons. They represent certain anarthas or unwanted challenges that are within ourselves. So Arista, in this form of a gigantic bull, was roaring like thunder, galloping into Vrindavan. He was so cruel, with the intentions to kill everyone in Vrindavan, all the people, all the animals, all the birds, to even kill Krishna. That was his intention. And he had such arrogance that he really thought he could do it. Because of his power, because of his strength, because of his intelligence, he thought he had the right to do anything. So as he was charging in,
His galloping was creating earthquakes.
And all the cows and all the goats and all the buffaloes and all the people, they were terrified. All the mothers of all the species who were pregnant were having miscarriages due to the shaking of the ground and the fear of his roars. And although Krishna was playing the part of just an ordinary boy to reciprocate love with his devotees, because this is the quality of Vrindavan, where the absolute truth, the all-powerful Ishwara, the controller of all controllers, puts aside his godness so that he could be intimately loved, like a friend, like a child, like a lover. The residents of Vrindavan, the Brijavasis, they had the full realization of Krishna's supremacy as the absolute truth, the creator, maintainer, and ultimate annihilator of everything that exists, the father, the mother of every living being, the Paramatma within everyone's heart, the all-pervading Brahman, the impersonal, all-pervading, manifested, absolute, the source of everything. They had already realized that. But in order to facilitate the sweetness of intimate love, Krishna's beauty was so overwhelming as a friend, as a lover, that in order to facilitate that intimacy, that just went into the background, his supremacy. And Yashoda, his mother, is thinking, if I don't feed him, he will be hungry. And his friends are jumping on his shoulders. Could you imagine jumping on the shoulders of the almighty God of all gods? You hear about him throwing thunderbolts on people for misbehaving in any way. Can you imagine that person jumping on his shoulders and laughing, wrestling, dancing with him? That is Krishna. He is that person. But he wants to facilitate such free, spontaneous affection. Arista. When he was creating such a commotion, Sri Krishna Shadaram Mama, the people of Vrindavan, they actually, even though they didn't see him as God, they understood that he's our only shelter. And they all turned to little Krishna, said, please, save us. We have nowhere else to go. Because even though the Brijabasis are such pure, enlightened beings, they never thought themselves to be great, pure, enlightened beings. They considered themselves to be most ordinary. That is the nature of Vrindavan. The humility. People who are the greatest, most powerful, most highly realized yogis in Vrindavan, they think themselves to be very ordinary. And because they think themselves like that, they can totally take shelter of God, take shelter of Krishna with their body, mind, words, and life. Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. This is what it means to actually take shelter with a whole heart. Means we're actually dependent, like a little baby that's in danger. Just like if there's a little baby laying on the ground
and a massive bull comes running toward it, what is the baby going to do? The baby's going to cry to its mother as my only shelter. And Srila Prabhupada taught us, this is the mood in which we should chant the holy names of the Lord. So Krishna came forward and he spoke to Aristasura. He said, how dare you cause so much distress and suffering to my people? You've come to fight? I challenge you. Now Krishna's just a little boy. He didn't appear like a big warrior bodybuilder. He didn't have any weapons. He didn't have any bows or arrows or chakras or clubs or sticks. He was just, his limbs for his devotees were soft like flowers. But to Aristasura, those same limbs were like thunderbolts. And just to agitate Arista, Krishna did not go into a fighting position. Yes, sometimes in martial arts you pose yourself in such a way so you can combat your enemy. Krishna, he stood next to his little friend Subal, a little gopa, cowherd boy. And Krishna put one of his arms on Subal's shoulder and just leaned on him and stood in a very casual way and looked at Arista and said, come, get me. This infuriated Aristasura. It wasn't even acknowledging his power. Lifetimes of performing tapasya austerities to get the powers that he had to transform his body into this unbelievable form of a gigantic bull like a mountain, who had billions of times more power than any living being of the world today. It took so much effort, lifetimes of studying, of tapasya, of various technologies to get this power. And he's demonstrating it by creating earthquakes, by wreaking total fear in everyone. And Krishna doesn't even pick up a weapon. He leans on his friend and smiles and says, okay, come. This made him more angry. And he put his horns down. Huge horns. Now let's go back to what he represents. Because this is what's really important for us to understand. He represents that challenge that is within each of us. That challenge that we see within the world around us. So many people, their faith in God is killed by this Arista tendency. When we see people, in the name of love of God, in the name of Dharma or religion, who are hateful, who are violent, who are disrespectful toward God's children in all forms, it kills people's faith. It kills the connection of God within our hearts when we see this type of cheating in the name of Dharma.
So as Arista was coming toward Krishna, he put his horns facing Krishna and was breathing very, very heavy. His eyes were flaming red with rage. And Krishna just waited, smiled. And when Arista came right up to him, Krishna grabbed him by the horns and flipped him over and threw him effortlessly with his little soft hands. About 18 meters away, he flew. And he landed upside down. This made him even more angry. How dare you do this to me? And everybody's watching. This was a match. Everyone was very much observing. So then he attacked with even more force. And Krishna again flipped him over, and with his feet, which are so soft, the gopis would sometimes cry to think of Krishna walking barefoot in the forest because his feet were so soft. But with those same little feet that were softer than, millions of times softer than the flowers that you are plucking today, to Aristasura, they felt like, according to the verse, thunderbolts. Have any of you ever been struck by a thunderbolt? I don't think anybody has ever been directly struck by a thunderbolt and lived. Maybe indirectly and, you know, just some harm. But directly a thunderbolt. One thunderbolt has the power of nature is inconceivable, incredible. There's more power in one thunderbolt practically than in all of these electric power systems that are being built. Concentrated. And ultimately, Krishna, by his doing that, actually gave Aristasura mukti, or liberation. Because he was touched by the feet of the Lord. Even though he came with such ulterior motives, Krishna wanted to teach us that even if we have those tendencies within us, if we are sincere and we turn to God, by the grace of God, we are liberated. Aristasura attained spiritual perfection. But in the process, Krishna is teaching that when we take to Dharma or to Bhakti, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, we become like gardeners. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Rupa Goswami that when the eternal soul is within this material existence, the soul may wander birth after birth after birth through so many species of life. According to Padma Purana, there are 8,400,000 species of life that the Atma or the Jiva could live in within creation. And when that Atma comes to a most fortunate position, comes to the spiritual path, Adoshudatata sadhu sangulta pajanakriya. Some aspiration to understand atato brahma jigyasa. Who am I? What is the purpose of life? Where am I coming from? Where am I going? And there's faith. Faith develops within us that there is something beyond just the craze to enjoy and the craze
which just perpetuates birth, old age, disease, and death, samsara. There's something beyond. And when that awakens within us, that Shraddha, the Lord within our hearts reciprocates and brings us to sadhu sangha, to the association of saintly people. It's the most valuable gift in all of creation, satsang. Mahatsevam dwaram ahuravam uktes tamo dwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. Because the association, the company of people who are genuinely on a spiritual path, saintly people, it opens the doors to the highest liberation. We actually begin to understand who I am. What is my purpose? Who is God? What is my relationship? And in that association, we meet our gurus, our initiating gurus, Diksha gurus, our Shiksha gurus, our instructing gurus, and then Bhajana Kriya. We're given a spiritual path to follow. And when we follow this spiritual path, it awakens the seed of prema, the seed of love that is dormant within our hearts. But in the association of the Lord's devotees, that seed awakens. It begins to sprout. And then we're taught in that association our sadhana, our spiritual practices, which is the way of watering that seed. On the path of bhakti, the primary ways of watering this seed of prema or love is hearing these highest truths, hearing the values of character of the great saints that we could actually follow in the footsteps of, hearing a philosophy that actually gives us a practical understanding of how to be in this world but not of this world. How to transform material energy into spiritual energy by our consciousness, by our seva. This is the first principle of sadhana, is to hear from enlightened sources. And the next is kirtanam, to chant. And there's different ways of chanting. One is to repeat what we hear, speaking the truth. And especially in this age of Kali, this time of quarrel and hypocrisy that we live in the world today, most powerful means, Hadarnam, 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 Eva Kevalam, is chanting God's names. This chanting of these divine mantras, these transcendental sound vibrations, the absolute truth, Ajit, the unconquerable, inconceivable Lord of all existence, has made himself so accommodating that he comes within the sound of the mantras, the sound of the name. And Om Apavitra Pavitrova Sarvavastam Gatopiva. Because the Lord is all pure. When we chant his name, we become purified. And Smaranam, remembering the Lord. There are 9 processes of devotional service, especially this hearing, chanting, remembering, and doing seva, service. Satsang. This is how we water that seed of prema within us. And as we're watering it, anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti means gradually all these unwanted qualities, desires, misconceptions of ego within us are purified. And as we become purified from the dust, Lord Chaitanya compared the chanting of God's name as the practice of bhakti to cleaning a mirror. When you look in a mirror, you see yourself. But if the mirror is covered with layers and layers of dirt and dust, all you see is that dirt and dust. The dirt and dust, as we have said, of envy and greed and selfish passion, arrogance, illusion, anger, all born of the ego. We clean it. And as we clean it, we actually see our own eternal nature. True dharma is to live with this high character. Aristasura's teaching, he had the lowest character, but yet he was posing in the highest position as the emblem and representative of religion or dharma. Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is such a prominent quality within the world we live today, even in the name of religion. So Lord Chaitanya explained, as we're watering this seed of praying, these hypocritical, selfish, egoistic qualities naturally spring like weeds around the original seed of devotion. And unless we're very careful, we will mistake the weeds to be the actual seed of love of God. Unless we're very careful, we will invest our time and energy, even our sadhana, in watering the weeds. And through our study of scripture, through our practicing of tapasya or austerities, even morality, our ego could get bigger and bigger and bigger because we're watering the weed. So it's important. Krishna's showing us in this beautiful lila pastime how deceiving these weeds could be. And how we really have to take shelter of God's grace, because ourselves, we don't have the power to overcome the aristas, these gigantic bulls of our egoism, our hypocritical tendencies, or those of others. Like the Brijavasis, we take shelter of the Lord and understand what our true aim really is. And when through this anartha nivritti of removing anarthas like this, gradually that seed of love becomes nishta. Very deep realized faith in that higher power beyond ourselves. And when we continue to water through our sadhana, through our satsang, through our good character and our seva, when we continue, then that nishta grows into ruchi. Param drishtva nivartate, where we actually begin to taste the eternal nature of the soul. We begin to taste the sweetness of this higher reality beyond the ego and beyond the mind and senses. And then that ruchi develops into ashakti. Genuine attachment to the beauty, the sweetness, and the love of God. And that ashakti grows into bhava. or love.
Bhav is that preliminary state where the seed grows into a tree and starts to bud into the flower of prema. And prema is that fully blossomed flower when bhav becomes fully developed, fully manifested into our eternal highest nature of ecstatic love that is prema. Unconditional, unmotivated love for God, for Krishna. This is the basic system of how bhakti works. And Krishna's calling gopis into the highest prema, as he's calling us in so many ways, through his devotees, through the great scriptures, and within our hearts, if we just give attention to here. But the weeds, the aristasuras, are also coming up simultaneously. And it's very important that we understand what's happening. We shouldn't. Krishna performs these pastimes in such a beautiful way, and when we understand them through the disciplic line of people who have actually learned the purpose of understanding these stories, then it can free us from confusion, from bewilderment, and vyabhashayatmaka budhir ekeha kudunandana, to help us to really focus on the goal. Saragrahi, focus on the essence. If we're not really focused, if we don't have practices to keep us focused, if we don't have satsang of people who help us to remain focused, then these weeds will deceive us. And these aristas, these anartas, these unwanted tendencies due to our conditioned habits of the past have the capacity to delude us, to mislead us. And when we see other people misleading, sometimes we could lose hope. What's the possibility of me reaching the essence when even people who are like great bulls of Dharma have such low character? How is it possible? But this beautiful pastime is showing what our potential is, despite our bad habits, despite other people's bad habits. The highest liberation is within us, waiting for us, if we seek the essence and remain focused on that essence.
Savai pungsam poro dharmo yato bhaktiradhokshite yavaitaki aprati hata yayatma suprasitati.
Vishimad Bhagavatam in the first canto tells the supreme dharma is that which awakens unconditional, unmotivated, uninterrupted love for the one supreme truth. And Lord Chaitanya taught Trinadavi Suniche na taror ibasihishna amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahadi. Humility, forgiveness, tolerance, respect for others without demanding respect for oneself. These are the qualities that should be cultivated on the path of Dharma. Then only can we chant the holy names of the Lord with great feeling and experience God's love within our life.
Arista was posing as the emblem of Dharma, but his character was disrespectful, egoistic, and exploitative. And how much harm he was causing to so many. And when such aristas are in the world around us, we should understand that whatever people may do, it's just an external manifestation of what's in their consciousness. We often speak in the sense of the pollution of the ecology. There's great environmental crises within the world today. And what's the cause? An ecological environmental crisis within our hearts. The world is not really facing an environmental crisis. It's facing a spiritual crisis. And where there's a spiritual crisis within us, then naturally, when our minds are filled with greed, when our minds are egoistic, thinking that we have rights over other humans, other animals, other species, when we think that we have such rights over them, when we feel that we have the right to exploit Mother Earth for our purposes, due to our arrogance, due to our greed, due to our lust, due to our envy, and this is what happens. Innocent children of God are killed. Mother Earth is exploited. This exploitative nature is the root cause of the problems of the world. And Dharma is the path by which we actually learn the character of cleanliness, of the body, mind, and words, truthfulness. Truthfulness means no deception, no duplicity in our actions, our words, or our thoughts. Austerity. To be willing to live according to higher principles with integrity, despite temptations and fears that if we don't compromise, we may lose something. Or if we don't compromise, we may not get something. That is integrity. Austerity means to maintain the integrity of our principles, of our ideals, of our sacred values. And mercy, compassion, with one's body, one's mind, and one's words, to actually honor and respect the sacredness of life. Aham bija pradapita, because every living being is a child of God. Every tree, every insect, every animal, every fish, every human, of every variety, and everyone else who's a living being. We cannot honor God without honoring God's children. That is mercy. To feel, paradukha dukhi, the principle of mercy means that another's happiness is my happiness. Another's suffering is my suffering. Now, there's so many people suffering. If other people's suffering is my suffering, it seems we're going to be really miserable people. Yes.
If we're thinking that every living being in creation is my brothers and sisters, all children of the same God, and my suffering is every one of their suffering, and there's so much suffering on so many levels of so many humans and other species, it seems like we're going to be really depressed. Does that make sense? But it's not like that. The nature of mercy, the nature of compassion, when we have this selfless spirit of concern for other beings, we feel their suffering. When we feel suffering on the level of just the suffering itself, without that higher connection, it's extremely depressing. But when we have that higher connection, when we actually connect to Krishna's love, to Krishna's grace, then that compassion of feeling other sufferings is actually a type of ecstasy, ananda, because it's an expression of our love. Our love for the souls of others. And that compassion, according to Thakur Bhaktivinoda, who has given us this beautiful conception of what these asuras or these demons of Vrindavan represent and what we should learn from these lessons, he wrote a beautiful prayer that Sarva Dharma Sar Namaruchi Jivadoya. The essence of all dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Because there are so many scriptures in so many religions, in so many parts of the world, in so many parts of history, and so many interpretations, and so many different cults and sects and denominations of every religion. So, And there's so many apparent contradictions. And there's schools within every spiritual path. My way is the only way. When I was young, I was trying to figure it all out. And I realized I can't figure it out. Because there were people who knew so much more than me. I was meeting Christians who said, the way, the truth, and the light. If you're not following this path, you're condemned to hell. And every school was saying that theirs was the only way. Even other Christians were going to hell if you don't follow my way. Not everyone's like that, but there was people telling me like this. And when I was in the Middle East, people were saying, Muhammad's the seal of all prophets. Quran is the final revelation. All other scriptures only had their relevance up until our scripture. And if you're not following this path, you have no right to live in this world. People were telling me this. Only way. And Jewish faith. I was born in. There were people of the Jewish faith telling me, if you're not a Jew, you're not a chosen person. So you really can't go to God because you're not chosen. Doesn't matter what else. And I was meeting Buddhists who were saying the same thing. All this conception of God and religion is all hocus pocus. You just follow the path of Buddha. Otherwise, you're just in illusion, samsara, birth after birth. And I was meeting Hindus. So many ideas, so many conceptions. Some were telling me if you don't serve the Brahmins, you cannot become liberated. And what kind of Brahmins they were? I don't know. If you don't follow my guru, you cannot attain Goloka. Yes. You cannot. Some are saying bhakti is just superstition. What is this about a god with a form? And some are saying that, you know, God, unless you follow this path, then everything is condemned. So many conceptions. So little me, I'm just traveling around trying to understand, where am I going? But Bhakti Vinod Thakur gives this beautiful song. Nama Ruchi Jiva Doya Sarva Dharma Sar. Very sweet, very beautiful, very simple. Would you like to hear the translation?
Yes.
It solves so many confusions and problems. Sarva Dharma Sar means the essence of all dharma, the essence of all one's occupation, the essence of the purpose of life, the essence of all religions and spiritual paths is Namaruchi and Jivadoya. Jivadoya is a type of character. Jiva means all living beings. Doya means compassion, kindness, love. The essence of religion is to have respect and compassion to all beings. Not in a sectarian way. Because our tendencies due to our habits is our ego gets us trapped in nationalism or racism or communalism or speciesism. I never heard the word, but we identify with people of our own nation, of our own caste, of our own race, of our own religion, or even our own species. This is all egoism. Jiva Doya doesn't say India Doya. Doesn't say America Doya. Doesn't say human Doya. Doesn't say Hindu Doya. It says Jiva Doya. That means every living being. To actually feel compassion for all beings. To actually feel our connection, not in an artificial, superficial, theoretical way, but in a real way. Of course, real things sometimes begin with a theoretical conception. That makes sense. That's based on inner truths beyond ourselves that have been passed down by great sages and rishis and enlightened beings from time immemorial. And then gradually we actually experience that truth. Krishna tells in Gita, what is the truth? Krishna says, when you have thus learned the truth, you will understand that I am in every living being, and every living being is mine. When we love Krishna, we understand that principle. That is Jiva Doya. That's the essence of religion. It's not just a matter of what we call ourselves. It's not just a matter of, you know, how many times we bow down to the deity or to a holy place. All these things are meant to bring us to realize this Jiva Doya, this compassion within ourselves. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur, according to the path of bhakti, is saying Namaruchi. That we develop that Jiva Doya by ruchi, by actually developing the higher taste, the higher experience of love, which is especially accessible to everyone. And anyone.
through the chanting of God's holy names. And then when we chant with this spirit, when we try to live with this character, we call upon Krishna to come and liberate this arista that's within ourselves, within the world. And this flower festival we will be celebrating tonight. Just before, I'll briefly speak something about the flower festival. But our purpose is we're all coming together. In the room today, there are billionaires. There are millionaires. There are simple farmers. There are PhDs. There are people like me who really have no education at all. There's people from so many countries, from so many nationalities, from so many religions. And we're all together plucking flowers. On this level, no one's better than anyone else. Yes? Of course, you can think, look at me, I have white flowers. You only have golden flowers. White is the highest. But you see, in order to vanquish that illusion, all the flowers get mixed together. And then they're offered to Krishna. And our hearts are offered to Krishna. Thank you very much.